knife and sword. You always had been an artist. Your cuts were clean as your mother's, and the butcher was always impressed. Mine, on the other hand, I've been a hunter all my life. Skinning an animal and preparing it for consumption were not new to me. Yet somehow, the paring knife felt clumsy now. Would it not be easier to use my talons or my teeth? I'd get a better feel of the meat that way. Maybe taste it a bit and... This was why we went to these butchers to start with. So I struggled at first, and on occasion you caught me sinking my nails into pork or duck. But you always reached out for me. You always touched the base of my neck. "You can do this, Chef Ali," you'd say. "It's only blood and flesh." And so it was. The longer we traveled, the more things you tried to help me with. If a peddler traveled with charms supposedly from Sir Shar, you'd buy every single one. We stopped at every holy site we could along the way. Springs, forests, even a pit supposedly inhabited by an ornery rock god. We did not see the rock god, but you did nearly fall in it, looking for him. I caught your sleeves and pulled you back up again. But that was what it was like, traveling to Shanglai with you. Long days and long nights. Afternoons spent in local markets. Me wearing my fox mask, and you with a rice farmer's hat you insisted flattered you. It did not flatter you, of course, but it made you happy. And that was the same thing. In the evenings we'd set up camp, and I tried to cook whatever I'd hunted that morning with varying levels of success. I don't know how Uncle Ganzerik makes his stew so appetizing, but I can be sure it does not run in my blood. As we ate, I asked you about Shanglai, though you'd never been, about what the Xinese nobility are like and how they might view someone like me. "You are only half Hokarn," you said with a smirk, "so I imagine they'll like you much more than they like me." "Why?" I asked. "You do not represent 200 years of oppression," you said. "They were independent before my ancestor, Emperor Yoshinaga, sent General Izuri to conquer them. Ages of their own traditions and customs, and we forced them to embrace ours. Yoshinaga wasted ink telling our people we were superior to the Xianese. In reality, he only wanted to control their ports. And perhaps oranges. My family has a regrettable love of citrus fruit." "Citrus? You will see," you said, smiling, "if I don't eat them all first." As we came closer to my brother's holdings, I found myself sitting up at night in bed. Moving clears my mind, it always has, and I find it still a useful habit. But in those days, I was so focused on what my brother would think of my condition that I was paralyzed. Staying in one place leads to a stagnant soul and mind. You see only one patch of the sky, one patch of stars, and never witness Grandmother Sky's true glory. Demons, too, find you more easily when you stay in one place. I think the last is somewhat unique to me. Ghosts are an exception. Ghosts will haunt you to the ends of the earth if you've upset them, even if it has been actual decades since you did so, and you've tried to repent, but... Continuing... In our room not far from Shanglai's capital, the knot you found me again. It formed from the shadows in the far corner, like smoke solidifying into a human form. Our previous encounter left it with thick bruises around its neck. A festering pit gaped back at me where its left eye once was. It did not stand, did not beckon me. It merely sat in the corner and stared at me. Seeing it toward old wounds, I hissed, bared my teeth, my nostrils flaring. "Leave," I said. Bones rattling in a cup. That was the sound it made. "You cannot be rid of me, my love," it said. "I am not a stain on your prized deal." I thought of waking you, for you slept curled at my side with your thumb between your lips. Who was I, though, to ruin such a perfect slumber? No. I would be all right. This thing was not real. One hand on the bare skin of your heavenly hip would be enough to ground me. "Why are you here?" Now it craned its awful neck at me. A thick black tongue darted out from its rotted lips. "To warn you," it said. "Your brother will lie to you, Steel Eye. At this, my fury threatened to bubble over. I squeezed your skin. You groaned in your sleep. Sad as it sounds, I clung to that noise. I forced myself to remember the consequences of losing control. "You're the liar," I said. Its head lolled to the side, ear to shoulder. The matted clumps of black that served as its hair swayed just enough for me to catch sight of its right ear. "Your uncle's in the possession of a dog, a monstrous red thing half his size at the shoulder. I want to say it is more fur than dog, but I've been tackled by it once before and can attest to the creature's strength. Regardless, there's so much fluff, it is difficult to make out the thing's features, all except for its ears. To prevent infection, its ears are cropped to resemble a horse's. So it was with the not-used ear, or what was left of it. A twisted nub of flesh poked out from the side of its head, about the top third of a normal ear. Seeing it sent a chill straight to my gut. I covered my mouth. Why, I wondered, did this disfigurement upset me more than the rest? That is the trouble with telling you the story this way. You know why it upset me. Yet I must continue to tell the tale, for I have gone too far now to abandon it. The knot you fixed me with a piercing look. "Am I?" it said. "Steal I. I alone have never lied to you, and I never will. How could I lie to my own precious blood?" "You sicken me," I said. I kept one hand on your hip, the other moved to my stomach. This lurching, I wanted to throw up, but I hadn't eaten anything in a week. "An upset stomach is a small price to pay for the power I've given you," it said. "And you will continue to grow stronger. How beautiful you will be when you finally meet him." Not worth getting angered over. Not worth striking it. Not worth giving into that rage. But gods, how I wanted to hurt it. "I will leave you, Steel Eye," it said, "for you will not hear reason. But when the conquering one comes, when you most need him, remember what I said. He will lie." As it spoke, it began to lose substance. Again it was smoke, though this time it dissipated in the wind. The word "lie" hung in the air like a ringing gong. I slipped beneath the sheets and let my fingers climb the ladder of your spine. When I reached the top, I kissed the nape of your neck. Only then did you turn toward me. Your eyes fluttered open, weary with sleep, but your hands cupped my face. "My love," he said, "is everything all right?" Tomorrow we'd see my brother. Tomorrow I would know what his wife was like, what his new holdings were like. Tomorrow I'd have to tell him what happened in Shiseki. The knot you spoke of lies and dark futures. But in that moment, it was just you and I in an inn room, away from the prying eyes we'd soon have to avoid. You and I, alone and naked, huddled together beneath the sheets. When our skin meets, when our hearts beat so close together, when we are so tangled up in each other that we cannot tell ourselves apart, this is the most sacred time. "Yes, Shizuka," as I stroked your face and wiped drool from the corner of your mouth, "it was a holy thing." "Yes," I said, and I pressed my lips to yours, speaking silent prayers. I held you until you fell asleep, and then I kept vigil for you. Against what? I did not know, but I was not going to let anything ruin your hallowed slumber. In the morning we'd ready to travel. Half a day it took us, but it felt like more in that heat. Oshiro in the summer was, at best, a little warm. The steppes were hotter. But the southern provinces? Sweat trickled down the back of my neck. My deal was damp in an hour. There was a thickness to the air here, like breathing underwater. Maybe it was all the vegetation. Shonglai was green as far as the eye could see, and not a Hokkaran green either, bright and bracing. This was a dark color, near black in places. Where Fujino boasted tall trees and mountains, here the trees weren't much taller than a man might be, and everything was wet. Yes, after 2 hours of riding it rained, and I do not mean to say it rained a little, as it does on the steps. This was not a fine mist, nor was it the gentle pitter-patter we enjoyed in Oshiro. I felt as if I personally had upset Grandmother Sky. There's no other way to explain the amount of water she poured down on us that day. Had she burst open the largest cloud she could find? Was she attempting to water her garden, and instead she watered the earth itself? Was she filling her rice pot with water? I do not know, Shizuka. I do not know. But there's no reason any place should ever experience that much rain. It got in everything, even inside my saddlebags. My deal, already wet, flopped against my skin like old leather. You were doing your best to guide your horse with your knees and hold my old deal above your head to keep the rain out. It wasn't working very well on either count. By the time we spotted the Bronze Palace, I'd seen enough water to last 10 lifetimes. I was swaying in the saddle from the frustration of it all. We didn't see rain for months on the steps, and now I knew why. The damn southern provinces hoarded it. But then I caught sight of it. The Burkila clan banner hanging from the outside of the palace. And my whole body shook with laughter. I pointed it out to you, and you grinned too. "Go," you said. "Greet your brother, my love. He must have missed you dearly." I glanced over toward the palace, then back to you. I jerked my head in the direction of the banner. You offered a warm smile. "I will be right behind you," you said. "But if you arrive first, he can properly greet you. If I arrive at the same time, he will be forced to follow protocol. It is better this way." I wanted to kiss you, but there were guards outside the gates. So instead, I kissed the scar on my right palm. You flushed a bit. And then I was gone, kicking Alsha into a full gallop. Gods, Shizuka, I was so happy to see him again. My brother, 8 years gone. My brother, who helped me make my first bow. I decided that if I was going to be the one to enter the Bronze Palace first, then I would make a show of it. First, I grabbed a strap from my saddle. This I tied around the horn in a loop. Then, just as I caught sight of a tall man with sandy hair, who must be my brother, I swung myself off the saddle. My back was against Alsha's flank, my legs extended out in the air, my head closer to the ground than most riders are ever willing to go. An explosion of applause and whistles made my heart sing. Was it a bit of overkill to perform such a trick? Perhaps. But I had to show my excitement somehow, and when I dismounted, I ran to my brother. I ran to him as if nothing had changed, as if I were still 8 and he was still 14, and we'd never been apart at all. Yes, he was taller now, but so was I. And so what if he wore his sandy hair and a Hokkaran topknot? His skin and eyes had stayed the same. He squeezed me so tight I could not breathe, and then he sniffed my cheeks in turn. "Little sister," he said in Korn, "welcome home." I stood on tiptoes to better sniff Kinshiro's cheeks. Excitement buoyed me so that I forgot about my condition, until that moment. Then the rush of scents mixing together reminded me of what it was I'd become. Rich perfumes, something bright and sharp. Parchment end. Fear beneath it all. A corrupting sweetness that turned everything else to rot. Why was he afraid? Cold dripped down my spine. He was afraid. My brother was afraid. And I didn't know why, and... He squeezed me tighter before holding me at arm's length. No trace of trepidation showed on his face. Indeed, it was as wide and warm as ever. My father's nose looked natural on him, a compliment to his high cheekbones. His eyes, too, were more Hokkaran than Korn. It's a common joke that no one can tell when a Korn opens their eyes, since they are so narrow. I do not understand why this is so common. Hokkaran eyes are narrow, too. No one here on the sands has eyes like yours or mine. No Surians I've met either. And the pale man I met had eyes like a frightened deer. So no, I do not understand why Hokkarans make such a grand deal of it. It's not as if we can't see. I cannot tell you how many times I've been asked this outside the steps. With every repetition, it grows more and more grating. Yes, I can see. I can even see out of... I'm losing myself again. Kenshiro was happy to see me. That's where I was. At least he was acting happy to see me. But I could smell the fear on him, though, when he was grinning from ear to ear. Shefa Lilong, he said. You're so pretty. The boys must be beating their way to you. Oh. Of all the things for him to say, I expected that least. He did not know about you and me. I'd gotten so used to being with you that I'd forgotten. I shifted from foot to foot and looked at my boots. A blush rose to my cheek. I did my best to try to fight it. Blushing only made me look bruised. I ended up hiding my face against the crook of my shoulder. Kenshiro laughed. See? I knew it to be true. Well, do not worry. They shall not reach you here. The Bronze Army will be more than enough to keep suitors away, he said. I continued shifting from foot to foot, wishing for you to return. Whatever pomp and circumstance accompanied your arrival would be a welcome distraction from all this. Someone spoke up, someone with a soft voice. I glanced over. For the first time, I noticed there was a woman standing next to Kenshiro. Taller than you, though not by much. She wore chemise-style clothes. That is to say, one loose-fitting plum dress with impossibly large sleeves and a short green jacket over it, with even more impossibly large sleeves. I envied the cut of it. Hokan dresses were so narrow they afforded little movement. Baozai's dress at least allowed her to walk like a normal person. The jacket's high collar came just beneath her jaw, enclosed with two elaborate clasps I could see from a great distance away. It gave her the look of a flower on a stem. Yes, I think a flower is a good comparison. Not a peony, or a chrysanthemum, or any of the ones you favor. No, she was a stem of lavender, straight-backed and fragrant. Kenshiro took her arm and brought her closer. If he was grinning before, he was beaming now. Shefa Lilong, he said. This is my heart of hearts, Lady Lai Baozai. Instead of the full bow favored by Hokkaran courtiers, she bent to the shoulder and touched her lips. I am 8 times honored to meet you, Lady Alsharia, she said. I winced at the name, but she did not know any better, and then her polite smile became something more genuine. To be honest, I have always wanted a younger sister. I have so many older ones. And this time there is no fighting the flush on my cheeks. She thought of me as a sister? We'd never met. But, well, if my brother liked her enough to marry her, then she must not be so bad. She hadn't commented on my appearance or my color yet. As far as I was concerned, she was doing a fine job of being a sibling. I did my best to mimic her half-bow. When I rose, I also attempted a warm smile that did not bear any teeth. I think I succeeded only in pulling my lips back. I tried to think of something to say. It is not every day one meets a new sibling for the first time. A momentous occasion like this warranted something sage and profound. Thank you, I said. That would have to do. Horns sounded behind us tore away our attention. The 40 guards gathered in the courtyard bowed their heads at the same moment. I turned. You sat on your red gelding, riding in through the gates. You robbed breath from my lungs, but you always do, Shizuka. Presenting the 8 times honored imperial niece, shouted the crier. He'd not announced me. I did not hold it against him. May she live long as her storied ancestors. Look how her heavenly blood paints her cheeks red. Witness her regal bearing, her unmatched beauty. We of Shanglai are blessed to be in your presence, Highness. You fought to keep that imperious look on your face. It was a battle you lost. Halfway through the crier's diatribe, you cracked a wry smile. It's a miracle you did not roll your eyes. I covered my own mouth to hide my teeth. I couldn't help but smile at the sight of you. But I did somehow manage to forget that one is supposed to prostrate themselves in the presence of royalty. Only when you gestured at me did I remember, and I hope that no one caught sight of me standing as you entered. I'm sure someone did anyway. I listened for the sound of your feet hitting the ground. Your golden voice soon followed. "My 2 feet have touched your land, thus you are twice blessed," he said. "Approach. I bid you speak your name, Lord of Shanglai, and speak your lineage. In speaking to me, you are again twice blessed." "I'd never seen you do this before. Had things changed because you were heir now, or simply because you'd gotten older?" "May it please your Imperial Majesty," Kenshiro said. "I, Oshiro Kenshiro, son of Yuichi and Barkil Alshara, am Lord of Shanglai." "I love my brother, but I do think it's foolish he had to go through all of this and not his wife. He was Lord of Oshiro, without a doubt, but his claim to Shanglai came only through marriage. Was it not more fitting to let the actual heir to the province take care of all this? But I am only a simple barbarian, and what do I know of politics?" You raised your right hand and waved him forward. "Come," you said. "Oshiro-tun, kiss my feet and be twice blessed. Kiss my hands and be 8 times blessed. It is a strange thing to see someone you love become something else. I'm certain you know what that is like, for you have seen me in my states. What I witnessed that day was not horrible. I do not dread its memory, nor do I think you've gone through some irreparable change. But it was uncanny all the same to see the face I loved become so distant. Even your flaming tongue was cold now. You hardly sounded like yourself. I watched as Kenshiro kissed your feet and your hands in turn, and I imagined what you would look like on the dragon throne. Is it a comfortable throne, Shizuka? You have no wife to stand at your side. Do you wear the dragon crown, or the phoenix one I so admired as a child? And if it is the phoenix crown, do you touch the places where the feathers used to be, and think of me? Once this strange ritual was complete, you allowed yourself to return to the Shizuka I knew. Kenshiro got to his feet with a monk-like smile. Husband, Baldai cut in. She tilted her head toward him as a silent reminder. Kenshiro cleared his throat. Ah, yes, he said. You must forgive my terrible manners, Lady of Ink. I cocked a brow. You chuckled. So is it true then, Lady Baldai? She said. Your people do not name the Imperial family. And yours never write your name fully, Baldai said. We do not speak your name for the same reason. It is an old custom. I see, you said. You raised a brow as your lips curled into a smirk. Was it you, Oshiro Lao? Did you pick the name? Kenshiro shook his head. Oh, no, he said. I could never be so poetic. It was my wife's doing. Baldai, for her part, preened at the attention. She shot her husband a coquettish glance, then gave you another half-bow. I felt it fitting, she said. Scholars even here in Shanglai mimic your hand. If you prefer something different... No, he said. Lady of Ink is acceptable. Baldai's relief was visible in her slightly slumping shoulders, in the breath she let out all at once. Thank you, Lady of Ink. Baldai wasted no time and no expense. An hour at most was all it took to prepare the feast. In that time, she offered us a change of clothing and took us on a tour of the Bronze Palace. Here were some soldiers her ancestors were buried with. Here were some portraits of them. Here was a massive garden twice the size of yours at Fujino. Here was a bridge over the garden's private river. Everywhere we went, a young girl followed throwing jasmine in front of us. 2 men carried umbrellas behind us. I kept trying to avoid mine, or at least to get him to put the umbrella down. The sun is bad for your complexion, Lady Al-Sharia, he protested. Why? I asked. It makes you dark. Such foolishness did not dignify a response. All I did was point at my own skin, at its loamy brown color, and keep walking. To her credit, Baldai apologized for this incident later during the feast. And what a feast it was. Do you remember, Shizuka, how every single plate was either gold or porcelain or both? Whole ducks, exotic fish, hearty soups, bowls of rice larger than some toddlers. There was so much food. And the smell of it all. Gods, there were so many smells that made me dizzy. Imagine 20, 30 different courtiers screaming at you to pay attention to them. You, of course, have no interest in hearing them speak, and I had no interest in eating the food. But it was nice to look at, and I felt bad for Balzai. She kept pushing more portions toward me. "Lady Ashavia," she said. I was going to have to correct her eventually, but... "Is the duck not to your liking? We don't have kumak, but I think there might be some horse meat on the table somewhere." "Sorry," I mumbled. "Not hungry." "Not hungry," said Kenshiro. "You've been riding all day."
"This must be why you are so skinny," Balzai said. "Is she always like this?"
My brother shook his head. "When she was a child, she'd eat anything we put in front of her," he said. As a young girl looks for her parents when she is asked to answer a question, so I look to you.
"Barzalia, sir, is recovering from a long illness," you said.
"Her appetite has sadly withered." Wrinkles appeared near Kenshiro's eyes. I do not think he believed you.
"Lady Alshiria,"
Balzai exclaimed, one hand rising to her mouth.
"I did not know. Forgive me. If you like, I have healers."
"They will not be necessary," you said.
"Lady Balzai, you must tell me about your dress."
So we made our way through the dinner. For the most part, conversation was pleasant, and you liked the food enough to have second servings. You were served from separate bowls, separate utensils. If you wanted duck, there was one just for you. If you wanted soup, there was a whole pot bearing the imperial seal. You did not come close to finishing all of it. I later discovered whatever you did not eat was burned. Can you imagine, Shizuka? People could have eaten that, but the Shinies ascribe a certain level of holiness to their royal family. Hokarans do too if the legends are to be believed. Your veins hold heavenly blood. Yet, I have never seen Hokarans throw away food simply because you touched it. I wondered why Balzai was extending this courtesy to you. If the customs applied to the Shinies royal family, then it should apply only to Balzai, Kenshiro, and myself. You are not a relative by blood or marriage. Balzai, who would have been sovereign ruler of a nation if not for your grandfather, should have hated you. But she did not. And here she was, lavishing you with courtesy and respect. It gladdened my heart, Shizuka. The two of you struck it off from the first instant you met. Listening to you talk of various dressmakers and novels and perfumes, for the first time in my memory, you were enjoying yourself with someone besides me. So yes, it was strange that Balzai went through all that trouble in your behalf, but it was a pleasant surprise. But after the servants began gathering our trays and we said our goodnights, Kenshiro asked us to come out onto the veranda. "I have some plum wine," he said. "Fit for the little empress herself." And yes, he smiled. Yes, there was a twinkle in his eyes, but I could smell the suspicion on him like smoke. "It's been some time since I had plum wine," he said. We were going to have to tell him sooner or later. We trudged outside. I trudged. You glided as always. I do not think it is possible for you to move without elegance. "What if he hates me?" I mouthed as we walked. You could not touch me in public, but you softened your features toward me in the way lovers do. "He won't," you whispered. The three of us stood outside on the veranda overlooking the gardens. Gardens seemed too small a word. It was more... It was as if all of Hokkaido existed in microcosm here. Large trees grew in miniature. Mountains were replicated with thick slabs of rock. Dense shrubbery mimicked the forests around Fujino. Someone even built a miniature jade palace. The weather was balmy that night. Lightning bugs flickered in and out of existence. Night clouds veiled Grandmother Sky's starry gown. Everything was dark and lovely and fragrant. Why was Shanglai not the imperial seat? I liked it far better than Fujino. Maybe it was all the rain. "You've done well for yourself, Kenshiro-lao," he said. You leaned on the railing. With a wave, you dismissed the guards he'd brought with us. "Lord of Shanglai, and your wife certainly knows how to welcome guests." "She's excited to meet you, Oshizuka-shun," he said. I was nervous given the tension between Shanglai and Fujino, but I had the feeling you two would get along. The hope, really. Perhaps it helped that I talked you up a bit. It did, you said. I've never had such a pleasant reception in all the Empire. Kenshiro offered a small smile. I will tell her you said this, he said. She will hold the words forever dear to her. I watched the two of you talk. Soon, soon, until I had to speak, I'd watch the lightning bugs. We never had them on the steps. They were one of the few things about Oshiro I missed. Shefa Lilong, Oshisa Kashon said you were sick. Is that true? A steadying breath, a nod. He broke eye contact for a moment. And our mother is not speaking to you. Another nod. I did not want to do this. Couldn't I let you do it? No. Kenshiro was my brother, my last remaining family, besides my father, though I am not certain if he considers me family at all. So I held open my hand, and you gave me your short sword. I drew the blade across my fingers. I'm not sure which was more unnerving to the two of you, that I did this with such ease, or that I did not flinch at all from the pain. In the weak light, it was hard to see my blood's true color. I stepped toward one of the hanging lanterns. Kinshira's brown skin went pale.
Shefa Lilong, your blood is...
I could not bear to look at him. I stood there with my palm raised, blood dripping down my wrist. You should know, you said, that your sister slew a demon with me. If it weren't for her, I would not be standing here today. But... You swallowed. She has paid the price for her unwavering devotion, you said, and the words simmered in your throat. My knees shook and my empty stomach threatened to turn inside out. No doubt Kenshiro looked on me with disgust now. Any second, he'd call the guards back and have me escorted out of the palace. But when I opened my eyes, he was rushing toward me with arms outstretched. He scooped me up into an embrace, tight enough to knock the wind from me. I froze, unsure of how to react. Surely he did not mean to do this. Surely he meant to strike me. No. He held me as his chest shook with weeping, as his tears landed on my shoulders. My baby sister, he said. Eight gods, you're the bravest girl I know. Kenshiro? My whole face felt hot, and suddenly there were knives in my throat. When Kenshiro released me, he was wiping away tears. Does it hurt, Shefa Li? He asked. Do you need anything? If it exists, we'll find it. It. I swallowed. It hurt constantly, but the pain was a fact of life now. I couldn't escape it. It doesn't hurt. Has it changed you? He asked. You're acting like the same sister I've always known, and you've brought Shizuka-shan. You must be the same, yes? You spoke then, holding yourself tight. Your sister, you said, is fighting demons we cannot see. Sometimes they... You touched your throat. They cloud her judgment, but she is learning, growing. She will master them soon. Kenshiro paced about the veranda. Snot trickled out of my nose. I tried to swallow. No, my throat was too dry and the knife was still there. Is this why you did not eat? I don't need to, I creaked. Not at all, he said. What happens if you do eat? I do not want you to force yourself, Shefa Li, but people might notice. We must come up with something to say to them if you cannot eat at all. Ash, I said. Tastes like ash. Which was true. The few times I'd attempted eating, everything tasted burnt. Everything except raw meat and blood. Kenshiro did not need to know that yet. He rubbed at his chin and nodded. Is it the same when you drink? He asked. I nodded. She no longer sleeps either, you chimed in. An hour or two at most each week. At this, Kenshiro quirked a brow. His dark green eyes moved from you to me to you. Were you often forced to share rooms while traveling, Oshizuka-shun? For once in your life, you were caught off guard. You opened your mouth, shook your head, and raised your hands all at once.
Well...
One tent, I cut in. No money. Kenshiro kept his eyes on you but nodded. I see,
he said. Yes, I suppose you girls didn't want to identify yourselves either. Isn't that right? This pause was enough for you to get your footing again.
Exactly right, he said.
If it was known we were traveling, I imagine we would have dealt with far more bandits.
He sounded confident.
So confident, in fact, that it was clear to anyone who knew you that you were lying.
When you said things, they came into being. You did not need to be so firm about it.
Kenshiro nodded at once. Something in his face changed, but then it was gone. If he was beginning to wonder about us, there were larger things to worry about.
Shafali, he said, you are a smart girl. I know you have already seen healers. Does anyone know what is happening to you?
No, I said. You raised your hand, stretched it out toward me, and drew it back once you realized how you'd already aroused suspicion. This charade already hurt me. I did not like this. I did not like having to pretend I did not love you, especially in front of my brother of all people. It was not fair. If you were male, my father would be falling over his own feet to get us married. Why was this so different because we're both women?
Traveling through Shanglai, we noticed for the first time men leaning close together, cooing into each other's ears. Women walked hand in hand out in the streets, and no one batted an eye.
Why was it so important to your uncle, to my father?
So many other things about Shanglai enraptured me. Whenever we encountered commoners, they were kind to me and did not gawk at me or my skin or my hair. No one here spoke a word of Korn, but that was all right. We spoke hobbled Hokkaran together. In Shanglai, I was invited to tea whenever I went out riding. In Shanglai, they used Korn messengers instead of Hokkaran ones. In Shanglai, my difference was something I could take pride in. I loved the music. I loved the people. And though I could not taste the food, I could smell it. And it was sumptuous enough that way for me to enjoy. I did not want to leave this place, not for a while. If I could not be on the steps, then Shanglai was not so bad.
Shafali, my brother said, you may stay as long as you like. Whatever comforts you need, I will find for you. I don't know how your condition affects you, but rest assured, you are still my baby sister.
He embraced me again. It was not the reaction I was expecting, but it was what you expected. Whenever we spoke of this moment, of what might happen when my brother learned what happened, you were optimistic.
He will still love you, you said.
My mother exiled me, I said.
You propped yourself up and kissed my forehead.
Because she is a harsh ruler, Shafali, with an image to maintain and people to keep safe. Your brother has not seen you in years, and I am certain that has worn on him. He will be overjoyed to see you again, no matter the circumstances.
I didn't believe you at the time. How could anyone look on me and still see a child of 8?
Yet here we were, and Kenshiro loved me as much now as he had then.
Over the next few days, we got to work on the details. Kenshiro made all his guards swear an 8-fold oath not to speak of my sleeping habits. Lady Baldai served me only the smallest portions at meals, a mouthful no more. Enough to avoid being impolite in public. A notice circulated around the palace kitchens. I was on a restricted diet, Baldai said, due to a wounded tongue, which also explained my quietness. And as much as I wanted to avoid attention, Kenshiro had already sent out invitations for the small tournament he promised me. Magistrates from throughout the southern provinces promised to attend. He could hardly uninvite them now. But we had the benefit of knowing when they'd arrive, and knowing when the tournament would be. 6 months from our arrival, to allow the magistrates time to travel. 6 months to figure out how I'd get through such an arduous social engagement without baring my teeth or eating more than a mouthful. If I was confined to my quarters at night, that was not so terrible, but the thought of eating too much turned my stomach. Besides, I was not going to stay in my own quarters, not for more than a few minutes at a time. In the northeast corner of the garden was a plum tree. Beneath it, its leaves like butterflies, we spent our mornings. Thanks to its distance from the garden entrance, not many people bothered to visit it. Remote, peaceful, the sounds of nature swirling around us. It was the perfect place for meditation. Sometimes, different kinds of meditation. You spent whatever time you could in the gardens. It soothed you, I think, to spend time near the plum tree. In its clearing, you practiced swordplay and calligraphy alike. On rare occasions, a visitor asked to see you. You met with him there. You kept saying I needed a hobby. One that does not involve taking lives, you said. Something creative to soothe your mind. Hunting, I said, is taking the lives of animals, you pointed out. You touched my nose with your brush. Ink stained my skin. You laughed. Something without any killing. At the time, I could not fathom what you meant. I did plenty of worthwhile things, like hunting and riding and wrestling, all good corn ways to spend one's time. I did not have your talent for calligraphy, and I've never had a good hand for drawing. Kenshiro could play the shamisen, but I could not tell one note from another. If I was not hunting, riding, or wrestling, what was I supposed to be doing? I found the answer in a roundabout sort of way. Because I broke Kenshiro's bow while out riding, I decided to make a new one for him. From finding good solid bamboo to tracking down a stag for its horns and sinew, I found the whole process a welcome distraction. My idle hours were spent working on the bow, and I could not spare many thoughts at all while doing it. The bow I made for Kenshiro was not the most perfect. I forgot to find him a birch wrapping. In the Shionese rain, it would not last an entire season. The whole thing would come apart when exposed to moisture. So I made him another. This time, I tried making it all out of one piece of wood, which led to many, many snapped bows. After a week's worth of terrible attempts, I found a shape that stayed put. Of course, that shape was more Hokkaran than corn, but at least it would not come apart in the rain. And it was not quite so large as a Hokkaran bow. Somewhere in the middle, then, like we were. I found it took less time to make a bow from a single piece of wood, so long as I knew what I was doing. One day was all it took there. For corn bows, it could take up to a week, since I had to put all the parts together first and subject them to the right amount of stress at the right angle and... Well, if I'm being honest, the Hokkaran bow is much easier to make, and I'm somewhat ashamed it took me so long to get the hang of it. There are so many more variables with the corn kind. My problem was that I kept trying to make the Hokkaran bow short, and it did not have the power it needed. But once I realized I had to make it larger, things got much simpler. Every now and again, I'd see one of Kenshiro's men carrying around a bow I'd made with my own two hands. It felt good to create something. You were right about that. But eventually I had to make a bow for myself, one strong enough that I would not break it. Not something I could do alone, since I was less than a novice. I told Kenshiro about my plans, and he invited a local bower to help me. Since all of Shanglai by now knew I had a damaged tongue, I could not speak to the man. Kenshiro had to do all the talking at our introduction. "My sister," he said, "enjoys making bows in her spare time. She wishes to make something more difficult. A corn-style bow so strong, no man can draw it. Will you help her?" The bower wrinkled his nose at me. Did I smell? "A bow no man can draw," he said. "Why do you want to do this thing, child?" "Child? I was 17, yet still a child," I grimaced. Kenshiro deftly stepped in. "Remember, my friend, you speak to Lady Shefali, my little sister. She may be a child, but we don't like to remind her of it," he said. The bower huffed. "That does not explain why she wants such a bow." Kenshiro grinned. He had an answer ready. "Only the man who can draw it will be able to marry her," he said. At this, the bower chuckled. He reached to clap me on the shoulder, then thought better of it. "To work, then," he said. "Can't have any weak-armed Hokkaran boys stealing you away." 2 months it took us, for we could not use birch and bamboo and normal horn. Oh, no. We purchased an exotic sort of horn from a merchant recently returned from Iktar. We used yew, and not birch. Bamboo was still present, though in smaller amounts, and the bow received a double coating of birch bark to save it from water. For the string, we used bear sinew. Bear sinew.
I had to hunt the bear myself, Shizuka. Do you have any idea how hard it is to hunt a bear on one's own?
Oh, do not look at me like that. It is still hard in my condition.
The boer complained constantly. This does not feel right, he'd say when we added in the sinew. There's too much. It's going to be far too stiff.
But I suppose that is the point.
It was difficult for him to make something useless on purpose, I think. Regardless, the end result was, and still is, the most beautiful bow I've ever seen. When it was done, we passed it around the barracks. Not a single soul could budge the string. Kenshiro clapped when he heard.
Good, he said. Then I shall not have to marry you to any of them, Shefa Lilong.
Could you imagine how upset Oshiza Kishon would be to lose her closest friend?
Except the way he said it. He knew. He had to have known Shizuka.
I blushed and cleared my throat. We resolved to test the bow that night. Balzai came along to see. The four of us stood in the barracks. Kenshiro dismissed the watchman for an hour or so, enough time for us to have some practice. I hefted the thing. It's heavy for a bow. At normal shooting distance I stood, far enough away that the target was a bit hard to see. I took a breath. I no longer had the ring I'd need to draw this bow the normal way. Then again, I didn't feel much pain anymore. What did it matter if the string cut my fingers? I drew. It was not easy, but it was not so hard as everyone made it look. Balzai applauded the second I pulled the string a bit back. I decided to see how long I could hold it at a full draw. A long while, it seemed. My shoulder ached, and my old scar tugged at my skin. But it was nothing I could not ignore. Then, the final test. I loosed. The arrow moved about as fast as your sword does. I did not see it fly. I only saw the target fall over from the force. Kenshiro whistled.
Did it go straight through? You asked.
I walked over to it, fighting the smile on my lips.
Yes, yes. The arrow had gone straight through the target.
Only the back third, the fletching, and a bit more, stuck out from the fence. The rest stuck out from the other side. Kenshiro jogged over.
Look at that, he said. Shafely, you must let me try to draw that thing.
Absolutely not, called Balzai.
What?
Teased my brother. He gestured for me to hand him the bow, and I did. My face hurt from smiling. This was going to be good. Kenshiro could barely draw a normal Korin bow. Oh, sure, he was older now. But as you came over, I stood next to you and cackled.
Does he want to lose a finger? You said.
I certainly hope not, said Balzai. My husband is in need of all his fingers.
You shot her a sidelong glance and smirked.
Is he now?
Balzai hid her reddening face behind her fan. I cleared my throat. You winked at me. That did not lessen my second-hand embarrassment. By then, Kenshiro was waving at us. Each of us drew in a quick anticipatory breath. He closed his fist around the string and... it did not move. He tugged and tugged, but the string did not budge. Soon he began grunting. Then he dug his foot into the ground until there was a small hole. One end of the bow went in. With his legs spread into a triangle, he grabbed the string. This time, all the muscles in his body went into it. And still it did not move.
You're so strong, Balzai called.
Thank you, my love, said Kenshiro. At last, he stopped trying. A great gasp left him. Beads of sweat trickled down his brow. I am the strongest man in Xiang, you know.
I picked up the bow and fired another shot. All through the night I tested it. The normal range of a Korin bow is 500 spans. Most arrows fired from such a distance tend to nick their targets at best. Mine was a clean pierce. We tried 700. We tried 800. Around 850, it seemed, was the bow's upper limit. After an hour or so, you and Balzai retreated to your chambers. Both of you were tired, you said.
From doing all the work, Balzai specified.
Ah, that's fair enough, Kenshiro said. Shefa Lilong and I will enjoy the manly Korin practice of archery ourselves.
I think Lady Barsalia is the only one doing any archery, you said.
Do not hurt yourselves. My brother and I stood together in the barracks and watched our lovers retire. I remember well the look on his face, his soft features, his distant gaze, his smile innocent as a child's. It looked silly, I thought. But I knew I looked the same way when I thought of you. Kenshiro sighed.
They're great, aren't they?
He said. I could still see you in your peacock robes. Balzai gifted you a Shionese-style jacket with a high collar lined with even more peacock feathers, twinkling under the starlight. You'd be waiting for me to return. You wouldn't sleep until you saw me again, for you had to know I was safe. How strange. The Imperial niece needed a security blanket. It's a job I've always been happy to fulfill.
Yes, I said. They are.
Despite Kinshira's boasting, he did not stay up much longer after that. An hour at most. Just before last bell, I led Kinshiro back to his rooms. His arms were so sore, he couldn't move the screen doors on his own. I slipped into our bed. Just as I expected, you were awake. You took me in your arms and held me close. In your porcelain embrace, I forgot myself. I covered my hands in the ink of your hair. I drank the wine of your plum lips. When we were spent, I held you near me.
Shefali, you said. Let's be like them one day.
You cannot nag me so much, I said. Laughter like bells.
You are right, you said. I'll nag you more.
Ah, Shizuka, I could write for years about the kiss you gave me then. It was the barest thing, the lightest caress of your lips against my chin. But even that is more potent than 1,000 poems. In the 20 ages of Okaro history, we have loved each other. Before the Quorum began telling stories, we swore our eternal devotion. Before Grandmother Sky yearned for Grandfather Earth, yes, even before then, our souls entwined together.
How I miss you. Gods above, how I miss you.
It grows more and more difficult to write this, yet I have come this far and I must continue, no matter the pain. In reading this, you've remembered our time together. You must remember these perfumed days. You must remember our life in the Bronze Palace, free of worries and cares, and you must hold those memories as dear as I held you. As you hold whoever it is that lies with you tonight. For 6 months we prepared for the tournament. For 6 months we delayed our fears. My condition bettered somewhat with the relaxing atmosphere and my newfound hobby. I was with my family again, with you. I ache to think of that half year. How could I have been so foolish? How could I have let those days slip between my fingers like milk? If we are gods, as you say, then I command you to take us back. Take us back to the miniature palace in the garden. Take us back to the plum tree. Take me back into your arms. Take me back to the night of the 8th of Shuzhen, before the first imperial messenger arrived, before he offered you a scroll sealed with your uncle's signature, before your uncle came for us at all, before the day we lost everything. The autumn time has come. When you received it, you were in the drawing room playing Go with Balzai. You were losing, which surprised absolutely no one, but you were losing more graciously than usual. A cup of plum wine sat near your hand on the table. Balzai teased you about your reckless tactics. You teased her for being so cautious. In the other corner of the room, Kinshira tried to teach me to play a simple melody on the shamisen. It was a hazy, warm moment, shattered utterly when the Imperial courier joined us. He didn't bother greeting Kinshiro and Balzai. He went straight to you and prostrated himself.
"Your Imperial Highness," he said, "the Son of Heaven sends you this."
All the comfort drained away from you.
"My uncle," you said.
Your eyes fell on the scroll, on its seal.
"You came all the way from Fujino. How did you find me?"
The messenger kept his eyes on the ground.
"Highness," he said, "I was sent from the Son of Heaven's caravan. When I left, he was 2 days from Shenglai. He will be arriving tomorrow." You could do little to hide your shock. I went to your side immediately, positioning myself so no one could see you shaking.
Tomorrow, you repeated. You jest. The Son of Heaven right outside our walls, and no one noticed?
Highness, His Majesty ordered anyone who saw him to silence. He wished to speak with you personally, and has sent this letter in advance.
You twisted toward Kenshiro. Are your guards blind? You snapped. Kenshiro flinched. You pressed your lips together and sighed.
I did not mean to be so rude, Oshiro-Lao.
Kenshiro, shoulders slumped, nodded. Considering the circumstances, anger is an acceptable response, he said.
I am sorry, Lady of Ink, that you did not have more time to prepare.
You said, waving to the messenger. Wait for my response outside. When it is ready, you will be summoned.
The Son of Heaven requested I stay at your side.
The Son of Heaven, you said, is not present. You will wait outside.
The messenger was not allowed to look you in the eyes, but he did stare at your feet in confusion.
Either he could obey the absent Emperor's orders and upset you, or he could listen to you and risk the Emperor's ire. Technically, your uncle outranked you, and he was the only person living who did. In practice, you were the demon slayer. Your calligraphy adorned official documents. Your father's poetry was read by lovers everywhere. Your mother's techniques obsessively studied by expert swordsmen. Your uncle had the throne, but you had the people's hearts. The messenger stood and laughed. You pried open the scroll. Next to you, I leaned in and squinted at the paper. Strokes wiggled in my vision, moving from one character to another. The more I looked, the more I got a headache. But you blazed through it, and when you were done, you threw it clean across the room. The scroll crashed against a lacquer screen. Both clattered to the ground. Lady of Ink, Kenshiro said.
Shizuka, what's wrong?
You covered your face with your hands. I tried to hold you, but you collapsed toward your own knees.
My uncle, you seethed, thinks he can rule me.
Is he recalling you to the palace? Kenshiro asked. You are nearly grown. Your birthday is in 2 months, is it not? You can stay.
If it were that pedestrian, then I would not be so upset, you snapped.
You drew in a deep breath and pressed your fingertips to your temples. A storm swirled behind your eyes.
My uncle has made an imperial declaration. Any man who bests me in a duel is entitled to my hand in marriage.
6 months I'd avoided the bitter rage of my illness. 6 months I'd gone without thinking of killing anyone. But the snarl that left my lips then was inhuman. You, Kenshiro, and Balzai all paled to hear it. My jaw ached from clenching my teeth so tight. Trails of drool left the corners of my mouth. You touched my wrist.
Shefali, you whispered. No one will beat me. Please do not worry.
I smelled the deceit as it left your mouth, but I knew you were only trying to keep me in my own mind. I thought again of the still pool of water.
Lady of Ink, I am sorry, Kenshiro said.
This is my fault.
All at once we turned toward him. Alarm bells rang in my mind.
He will lie. He will lie. He will lie.
What do you mean? You said. Your voice cracked.
Kenshiro-Lung, what do you mean this is your fault?
Kenshiro sniffed. His shoulders slumped, and the whites of his eyes went damp and red. Despite his great height, he shrank to a child. Balzai reached for his wrist, but he shook his head.
The Son of Heaven sent me word that he was coming, he said.
What?
You said.
You knew.
He will lie.
Kenshiro fell to his knees before you, forehead to the ground.
He said that if I did not keep you here, he would take mine and Balzai's titles. I'm sorry, Shizuka Lung.
Don't you lung me, you snapped.
How dare you? You knew he was coming and you didn't warn me.
The veins at your temple throbbed, as did the ones by the base of your throat.
I saw them. I smelled your rage.